Blog Talk Radio.
The following wrestling broadcast is performed by highly trained professional athletes. It is not recommended that their actions be imitated in any form whatsoever in the home. This is the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour with your host, Frank Namoli, and wrestling's masked cowboy, the Maverick.
All right. It's Friday night, 10 p.m. It is the longest running weekly episodic blog talk radio show about retro wrestling in history. The LAW Retro Wrestling Show. Of course, I'm your host, Frank Namoli, and by my side is my ever faithful partner in crime, wrestling's only masked cowboy, the Maverick.
Howdy, folks. Looks like we made it to another week.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, we're on double secret probation at this point. Is that a real thing?
It is now.
All right. Well, as usual, you know, we are talking retro wrestling. And tonight's subject, you know, I'm surprised it hasn't come up sooner. You know, we're into our 22nd episode. And I'm actually surprised this is the first we talked about it, but women in wrestling. You know, the women's wrestling is experiencing a resurgence right now. But I'll be honest, you know, there were heydays of women's wrestling where they were just as popular. You know, in back in the 50s, you had actual all women's wrestling federations that were drawing good houses. So, you know, we'd be amiss if we didn't recognize this part of wrestling history.
I think we've talked about women wrestlers in different aspects of the business before. This is just the first time we've dedicated a full show to it. Definitely not the last, but first we've talked about, you know, their role in managing tag teams and different things they've popped up periodically. So, but this will be interesting. My list very, very easy this week. It's like right away I knew exactly. There are people who stuck out to me over the years, and I just went boom, 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 and it's surprising who's on the list, I think, to some people, and not too surprising a couple others.
And you know the way I usually go. I usually go with a lot more of the older stuff, and my list was the same as yours. It flowed like water, you know, some for what they did in the ring, some for what they did outside the ring, but each one left a lasting memory that won't soon be forgotten. Why don't we just get right into it this week?
Really?
You know,
no witty banter about women's place in the business? You just want to jump right into the list?
Okay. Well, I didn't know. You know, I'm trying new things.
All right, we can try new things. Fine. Try new things.
No.
It's your show.
And I figure as we go along, we can talk about it because, you know, when you think about it, I guess I don't like the way some of the women are looked at today. You know, I hated the whole divas thing or knockouts. I liked women wrestlers. I liked managers. And some of the women have added so much to storylines, to wrestling, to just the overall show in general. And I think by just making them, hey, look, they look good and can do a few fancy moves, I think you took away what brought a lot of them probably onto our list.
All right. All right. I'll buy that.
Yeah. I mean, what's your opinion on the whole Divas Knockout thing? Because, you know, you usually have a pretty good take on the newer stuff, a little better than I do. What do you think? Do you think it does the history justice?
Well, what I think they tried to do originally with the term diva it was at a point where they weren't wrestlers anymore. They weren't wrestlers. They were superstars. And they wanted to set the divas apart. They wanted to kind of give them something that made them stand out. They wanted to brand something that would definitely set them apart from the Fabulous Moolahs and the Heidi Lee Morgans of the era. So they wanted to say that these are the new, and I'm going back to the Attitude Era when this happened. These are the new sexy, strong, you know, this ain't your grandma in a bathing suit wrestling. These girls are hot, they're sexy. And at the time, you know, there was two levels to the Divas division, which was very interesting and kind of not really talked about, because you had the diva, your Sonnies, your Sables, Marlena, the good-looking, sexy women who were still your valets and played a bigger part in the storyline than they ever had. But then you also had your Jacquelines, your Ivories, your Tories who could wrestle. And I think the diva term encompassed all that. And over time, because of the way that the WWE ignored the Divas division at times, how it kind of became laughable at times, kind of like what are you doing?
I'm actually doing nothing. Why?
I'm getting all kinds of weird clicking and typing and it's like you're typing.
Oh, wow. No, I'm actually just
I'm hearing all this typing in my ear. But over time, you know, they try to cruiserweight division. They didn't put any effort and emphasis into it. They did the same thing with the Divas division. It's like, we'll just put it out there. You know, for what months on end, it would be ignored. They did something goofy, like they put it on Stephanie. You know, it came with kind of a joke title, but that's kind of who they were dealing with. They didn't have a huge roster depth. And then when I forget which diva it was who started calling Stephanie on the carpet about it via social media. And I don't know if that was part of a long-term storyline or, you know, how. And the WWE up until recently was presenting the same type, your Total Divas show, you know, was an outlet to get, you know, the Bella Twins and some of these other girls over who weren't necessarily strong in the ring, or on the other end of it, your Natty Neidhartz, who's not necessarily charismatic, and try to give them a form. And they tried something out of the box with it, and that ended up not helping with your smart mark internet fans, who automatically labeled the Divas thing, you know, trash. But, you know, the Divas were much more important than, you know, a lot of the, you know, from after Wendi Richter, you know, they had that resurgence, that pop 10 minutes in the 80s where Wendi Richter was hot, and then the title was on TV periodically. It went back to ho-hum. It was ignored until the little stunt in the 90s with Alundra Blaze. So it never really got regular TV attention until it became the Divas title. So in that aspect, it was good. But I think overall it was a mixed blessing. Now to say that they're the women's division and rebrand it and try to give it, quote-unquote, equal footing with the men, it'll be interesting to see if they're sincere about that. I mean, we've only had maybe one Divas match main event Raw over the years, maybe two. I know of one. I don't know if there's been one recently. So it'll be interesting to see how serious they are about making it a long-term real investment.
Well, I don't know if you actually heard the rumor today, but WWE's thinking about doing a women's tournament of some kind that's going to be on the network. I don't know if you heard it. That rumor actually came out today.
Yeah, I did hear that.
Okay. So that could be interesting. It's interesting to see where you go, because while it wasn't a major pay-per-view, you know, they did have women headline a pay-per-view this year. It was an NXT pay-per-view, but still, you know, that's a huge step.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a big step.
You know, So definitely, you know, you made some great points there. It, before then, they were an attraction. And, you know, like you said, it's a mixed blessing where it brought them to the forefront. But at the same time,
right. For all the wrong reasons.
The forefront that went out. Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty interesting. I like your take on that because it's definitely going to, you know, be interesting when we go over our list. Again, we're going to have the pros and cons of it as we usually do. So I think we're going to take that one, maybe two packs and commercial breaks. And then when we come back, we're going to talk some women's wrestling. See you in three.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause. www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs.
Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
And we are back. No.
We
I'm
are?
Sorry. We are.
You're sorry?
I'm sorry. Not that we're back.
You're sorry we're back?
No. I'm sorry about something else. Don't you
right.
think that commercial would be better if it was read by the Letters from Holmes guy?
Everything would be better if it was read by the Letters from Holmes guy. I'd rather the Letters from Holmes guy than that weirdo that you hired to come in and get beat up and ridden like a horse all the time. He's the worst Englishman ever.
I wasn't going to mention our buddy, but... If you go on my Facebook,
I already saw it.
Okay.
I already saw it.
You know, I predicted a while ago that you guys were going to be long, long time rivals, and man, it is shaping up. You guys are relentless on each other.
Well, you know, it's the classic tale. You know, I'm smart, he's dumb. I'm tall, he's short. I'm pretty, he's ugly. Why wouldn't we hate each other?
Oh, I can't wait to see what's going to be popped. Don't be surprised if the phone rings tonight at some point.
We're not taking calls tonight, sorry.
You never know. He might be calling from Yorkshire Pudding.
He delvo deep is pudding.
All right. Well, women's wrestling. Let's jump into
it. Speaking of Wyndham James Winthorpe.
Oh, you swine.
Wrong guy.
I know, but, you know, maybe they could be like the Jumping Bomb Angels.
Do you think either of those guys can jump?
The Flopping Bomb Angels? I think they could both flop. All right. Well, let's do what we do best, and that is create lists. Let's hear the first one on your. It is. We do it well.
Okay.
We were actually voted top list makers of 2016.
Oh, how about that?
By Listmaker Magazine. Look it up.
See that? I know you won't.
Yes, we have some lazy listeners. I mean that in a nice way.
Mm-hmm.
All right, partner. Let's hear who you got first, because that's you always started off with a bang.
And as usual, my first pick's going to be an odd one out of the box. My very first pick is the Ivory, or Tina Ferrari, if you remember her early days as a glow girl. And to me, Ivory / Tina was one of the most underrated women's wrestlers of all time, because she was so good at so many things. And, you know, she's a multiple-time champion, but she's never quite gotten the recognition I think she deserves. And I don't know if it had – I mean, she separated herself from the glow thing. And, for you know, I thought she was brilliant in glow. I thought everybody was brilliant in glow. you know, for what it was a fantastic product, very campy Saturday morning women's wrestling. And then when she showed up in the 90s as Ivory, completely different character, I thought she did a great job. Her bit that she did in Right to Censor was so underrated. It was such an awesome, awesome heel character with the bun and the long skirt that she would wrestle in. And then just later in her career, when she was working as a tough enough coach, and you got to see how knowledgeable and how good she was in the ring.
You know what? That's one that I toyed on and off with on my list. For the simple fact is, she went from showgirl to you know, glow wrestling to the big show. And she had staying power. She proved that she deserved to be there.
Oh, yeah.
And then she took it one step further and proved that she had what it took to be a talker, a manager. She was the total package. I will give you kudos on that, because I agree with you 1,000%. She was so underrated. And, she had a run with the bell, and she had a – but there was just so much more you could have did with her. And I'll be honest, that's someone who at some point belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, I completely agree.
I would even argue – well, I wouldn't argue, but I would say I probably think she should have went in before Jacqueline.
I absolutely agree. Even though Jacqueline kind of was the predecessor to it all of the relaunch because she was right there in the beginning with Sable, I think on the long term, Ivory was more important to the cause. And I'm not
she
just
was.
Counting Jackie. She was awesome. But I think long term, Ivory was.
Yeah, and again, I think she was one of them overlooked characters because no matter what you gave her, she took the ball and she ran with it.
Yeah.
So I give you props on that one. That as usual, you started off pretty good. So my first one is. And again, this is one of the rare times where my list is kind of not in order because
all right.
I think it would have been a disservice to say this one was better than that one at this point. But,
fair enough.
On my first one that I want to say is one that I loved watching. And she was a strange case because even though she was a pioneer in wrestling, her popularity didn't take off until later in life. And, of course, I'm talking about the late, great Johnny Mae Young. Absolutely. And I'm going to tell you, there's a little – she's on my list for more than what she did, but she's on my list because she basically helped springboard women's wrestling in a way that a lot of people may not be aware of because they may not know the history. But – her career basically took off in 1999.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't ever recall seeing a Mae Young match that was in her prime, you know, through the years. And she wrestled for a lot of years. I don't remember seeing her in a battle royal. I don't remember seeing her in one of them big, goofy six women matches. Those big schmodges they would occasionally throw on house shows. I don't remember ever reading her name in a magazine until she showed up with Moolah and they became part of that crazy act that they did together.
Yeah. And as we saw in real life, I don't think that was an act.
Yeah. We told the story a few weeks ago about our run-in with them at Denny's where they were fighting and arguing and all over each other.
And a lot of people may not notice, she started her career in 1939. So if you think about it, 60 years after her debut, she basically re-debuted.
Right.
And the thing was, is like I said, she was one of the first women wrestlers, a pioneer. She was huge on the circuit. But a lot of people don't notice. You may notice, but I know a lot of people don't because they may think it's the other way around. But did you know that she trained the Fabulous Moolah?
She trained Moolah. Interesting. I didn't know she was responsible for training Moolah. I'm trying to remember. So, okay.
She had – what's funny is she had two famous students, the Equalizer and the Fabulous Moolah.
Yeah, she did better with one than the other.
But, and again, that's something that I think a lot of people didn't know because, you know, I guess a lot of people assume that Moolah was older than Mae Young, which if I look at their birth dates, that's kind of funny. They were born the same year.
Yeah, I always assume Mae was older because she seemed older, but she was a tough old bird. You know, she was willing to do some crazy things in her 70s, 80s, and whatever it was when she was active in the, you know, taking bumps and getting in and doing all kinds of sort of craziness and, you know, some rather bizarre things.
And you know what? Like, I remember watching it with you, actually. Remember when the Dudley boys put her through the table off the stage? And we were just like, because we didn't expect her to go through with it. And then when she did, we were just like, wow.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. But like you said, you know, if you go back to the early days, she was one of the pioneers that kept women's wrestling on the map and then just to like disappear, because I'm really surprised we never saw her in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s when Moolah was actually gaining some popularity. You know, Moolah was on a few WrestleManias, longest running women's champion, and you just never even heard about her. And then when she came on the scene, she was a character and a half. And I don't want to say that, you know, she was portraying, because I think the reason she got over so well is that was her.
Well, I think, to get along, Moolah used to say, you know, you had to be tough to get on in a pretty much a 90%, especially back in those days, male business. And you had to be tough and you had to be able to, you know, be a little rough around the edges. And I think her willingness to jump in and do some of these absurd things, you know, the storyline with Mark Henry, the thing with the Dudley boys, you know, the puppies angle that you did with Jerry Lawler, you know, you had to be a special kind of lady to be a wrestler back in those days. And she certainly was an out there character who was willing to do just about anything.
She was, and you always got a kicker when she would pop, like, just out of, and they used her so well sometimes where she'd just pop up out of the blue.
Absolutely.
One of my favorites is still when they did the When Harry Met Sally skit with Kane and Daniel Bryant.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they just focused on Mae Young. I'll have what she's what they're having.
Right. Just filling in that role.
So that's the first one on my list. You know, like I said, she was a pioneer, and without her, we may not have had women's wrestling the way we remember it. You know, she kind of led the way.
I don't know how accurate that is, but she definitely had a lasting impact on the business.
I mean, her and Mildred Burke were kind of the ones that got the whole women's thing started, because Mildred had that wrestling federation. And like I said, I think that they were the ones that kind of got the ball rolling, you know, and may have lost some steam, but, you know, I kind of give her credence too. Like I said, the fact that she was one of Moolah's trainers, that to me speaks volumes. So who's next on your list?
Next on my list is a controversial young lady, but she had a stellar career all over. I remember when I first started reading about her, because it was back in the days before I, you know, everybody was everywhere and there was the internet. So I only heard about her in, you know, magazines, very interested to see her. And I didn't actually get to see a lot of her until she hit in a complete character change in the 90s in the WWE. And then was responsible for one of the big pivotal moments in the Attitude Era that really changed the wrestling business as we know it. And, of course, I'm talking about Medusa Michelli, or Alundra Blaze, as she was better known in the WWE.
Oh, another good one. And, again, she was another one that I didn't know if I was going to make the list, because a lot of people – you know, like you said, remember her from her WWE, but before WWE, she was the AWA Women's Champion.
Absolutely. And then she went to Japan and had an amazing career where she was so big. She was, you know, she was a wrestling champion multiple times over there, but she was also a model and a singing star, because she had gotten so big. She was able to cross over in Japan and become a huge star. Before coming to the WWE as Alundra Blaze, she tried to kickstart you know, the women's division there, they made a big deal about her, but her style, the Japanese style that she tried to bring over the Bull Nakano's and Bertha Faye's of the world, just didn't catch on at the time, and eventually her push kind of dwindled, and she made that rather interesting move to WCW, where she threw the WWE Women's Championship, which may have been, now that I'm wrapping that around, that may have been a big reason why they were divas. Because she publicly went on television and threw the WWE Women's Championship in a garbage can.
Yeah, therefore, I remember
that belt was absolutely positively tarnished at that point. How do you bring prestige back to that? She threw it in the garbage and said it was pointless on national television. That may have been a huge reason why they went divas.
You know what? Now that you're talking about it, you might be onto something. Because really, how do you come back from that?
Right. I mean, from a marketing standpoint, how do you put prestige on a title when it was in the garbage can? The previous champion didn't walk away. She not only vacated the title, she threw it in the garbage. You can't be like, this is the most prestigious championship in all of women's wrestling. We fished it out of the dumpster the other day.
You know, and that, the way putting it that way, you're 100% correct. And, you know, WWF, that whole, the way they handled the whole WCW, that was another, you know, them handling things the right way. Because if they acknowledged it, if they tried to defend it, if they tried to put the belt on somebody else, they would have just been given credence to what, you know, WCW just did to them. So,
right. So they referred to them as divas. I mean, they did bring the women's championship back for a while before it became the divas title, but that might be why they were constantly referred to as divas. And you know, it was, you know, just a left turn kind of thing. Let's stay clear of the whole women's wrestling thing, because, you know, kind of poisoned. And that's why they weren't women wrestlers. They were divas.
I cannot argue with you there. That's a very good choice. Very good. Now, my next one is a little out of the box for me, because it's somebody who's newer. Not that new, but, you know, and I usually go with the older, but she always made an impression on me. And again, I thought she was another one who was the total package in women's wrestling.
Lex Luger's on your list?
He could be. No. The one and only Trish Stratus. I give her all the props in the world, because she was another one who was a phenomenal manager, constantly tried to improve herself in the ring. I mean, if you look at her early matches and her last matches, if you would have put a mask, you wouldn't have thought they were the same person.
Absolutely. Trish actually is on my list as well. So I completely agree with you. Trish was one of those, she was a fitness model. You know, they brought her in to be a valet for Teston Albert, which, you know, is one of the worst jobs in the world.
How did they not make our list last week?
TNA, I don't know. That's a really,
sorry,
we need to do a second annual World's Worst Tag Team.
Oh, how did we miss that one? Oh, man. Sorry. I digress. So like you were saying, they brought her in to manage.
Yeah, and her work ethic. She wanted to learn. She wanted to improve, and she stuck at it, and she became, you know, in my eyes, one of the best of all time. You know, not even just – you know, she's pretty high up on my list of, you know, divas, because she really did have it all. You know, the storylines they put her in, you know, the the romantic angle, she sold those well. You know, when it was a personal issue, like, you know, the one she had with Lita or the one she had with Mickie James, which was just phenomenal. You know, it was such a crazy storyline, and she was just so perfect at it. And then just as an ambassador to the sport, you know, outside of the ring, she always carried herself with grace and poise and was funny and engaging. Anytime you'd see her, they could send her anywhere. And she would just charm everybody, and just an all-around, you know, and even now, you know, she's left the business, and she's finally remembers it, and she's taught, you know, she makes her appearances here and there, and came back a couple of years ago to help out at Mania. You know, she's got a very successful business going on up in Canada, but she's still just an amazing person, you know what I mean, who just happened to be in the wrestling business. She was going to be a star no matter what. It just so happens that she chose to be a wrestling star.
Again, I can't even begin to argue or hit those points. And like you said, her dedication was unparalleled. I think, you know, people could learn, a lot of wrestlers, male and female, could learn a lot from her, because, you know, like you said, she just had a dedication, and she wanted to improve. She wanted to become the best in the world, and at one point, that's what she did.
Yeah, absolutely. And she was, I mentioned earlier, she was one of the two women who, you know, got to main event Raw, her and Lita.
Yes. So, got to ask, who's next on your list?
Well, it kind of bumps Trish up there, so, you know, that's taking one off of my list. So I'm going to go with, that's going to move things along. Let me take the other side of that coin, because, you know, she gets a bad rap at times for stories that went on behind the scenes, but I think Lita really, really changed the way a lot of people looked at women's wrestling. I mean, she was the first, in a lot of eyes, daredevil. You know, she incorporated a lot of the lucha stuff that you see out of Divas Wrestling now. And, you know, she was a risk taker and a high flyer. She got right in there in those table ladders and chair matches. You know, she did a hell of a job keeping up with the boys and pulling off some stuff. And, you know, I think that she doesn't get enough credit for her in-ring work, especially her feud with Trish.
I agree. I never understood the backstage mumbo jumbo with her, and what was the big deal. I mean, I never heard a bad story about her, but you couldn't argue with what she did in the ring. I mean, she was the next almost evolution of women's wrestling with being, like you said, she was basically a female Hardy, but with a better head on her shoulder.
Yeah. I mean, the whole Team Extreme thing was just so popular, and she was a huge part of it. The three of them, and they, you know, she was a big part of that. And then in the Divas division, she had some really excellent matches, and you know, that angle with Edge and Matt and Lita was so compelling and so strong. If Matt Hardy hadn't screwed it up, it probably would have went down as one of the biggest feuds of all time. But Matt Hardy just went out and crapped himself and dropped the ball completely, and, you know, just killed the angle. And obviously, you know, Edge and Lita went on to have a nice run as the top heels, but it should have also catapulted Matt Hardy, except, you know, he was a, you know, chowderhead who couldn't keep himself together.
And you almost wonder if they did that angle with somebody else, if it would have went, if it would have went a lot better.
I imagine somebody else would have taken that ball and run with it. He just did not do it.
Nah. I, and it's a shame too, because like you said, it was real. They had you buying every second of it. Her and Edge were so perfect, so spot on. You literally bought everything that was going on in there. You thought that was a real life situation.
Right, and because of the way it was presented, it seemed so real. And you know, and I don't know if there was any reality, if it was one of those reality, let's make money off this angles, or if it was a complete work and they just decided to capitalize on, you know, a great situation. I don't know the limit. I mean, I hear things, but, you know, watching so many work shoots, as they call them in the business, and being followed, you know, it was too neatly set up. You know, this happened. Matt made all these posts. The WWE fired him for exactly 90 days. You know, the day he was free from his WWE contract, he jumped the railing, got in the ring, and started brawling. So to me, it was just a brilliantly put together angle.
Remember, he
but when
was
you look
taking,
back,
taking. Sorry,
yes.
Go ahead.
No, you're right.
He was taking bookings.
He was taking bookings.
No,
but when you go back, you know, and look at it, he didn't fulfill any of those bookings. Like, he was sitting at home getting paid to push this storyline along. In my eyes, you know, the way I look at it.
Wonder if any of those feds knew that he was never going to be there. Because there were a couple that pushed heavily.
Yeah.
And I remember Ring of Honor being one of them.
They wanted him. They wanted him big.
Yeah, so great, great choice. I definitely, you know, she is in the Hall of Fame and well deservedly so. So no argument there. Hey, real quick, I gotta apologize. Usually we post videos on the Liberty All Star Retro Wrestling page.
I just sent you a text about that. You're putting them in the wrong page.
Yes, I just figured it out.
Mine are all going in the right one because I do.
I'm sitting there like, boy, Matt. And it's funny because I'm sitting here like, man, Matt's getting lazy tonight. I'm looking for his stuff. You know, I'm like, man, he's usually on top of this. And I'm posting all my stuff. And then I just look and I was like, wait a minute. Why isn't none of my stuff on here that I just posted? So I just put up my my Mae Young video. And
yeah. So if you're one of those 24 people following along on the actual Retro Wrestling Radio page, you saw all my picks. Frank was elsewhere.
All right. Well, like we said, when we talked about this list, we said we were going to do, you know, women in wrestling. And, of course, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't also talk about the ones that outside the ring who maybe contributed it. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
So my next pick, and this was another one who arguably you could say may have started a different way women were looked at, Missy Hyatt.
Interesting. But
because,
I'm with you.
Okay.
But I'm with you.
I go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I want to hear your.
Well, my reasoning for Missy Hyatt was there were women before her. And there was, you know, at the time there was Miss Elizabeth, and there was, but with Missy Hyatt, she was the first woman / manager that just came out. She captivated you. She cut really good promos, but she made you believe she was this whiny, nasty rich girl. She basically took what Jim Cornette did, twisted it to a female's perspective, you know, even as far as instead of hitting people with a tennis racket, she hit them with a Gucci purse. And turned it into somebody you wanted to get beat up. It was literally the first time I could ever remember rooting for a woman to get smacked around. of course, by another woman, not by like a wrestler or anything.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But when Sunshine got her hands on, and again, I look at it like she elevated women that were just floundering and didn't have personalities, like Sunshine, like Dark Journey.
Absolutely.
and she made stuff with them. Honestly, Dark Journey, the only reason most people remember her is because of Missy Hyatt. And I could argue the same thing with Sunshine.
Missy Hyatt was the first woman, like in hindsight, like looking back, because at the time she just bugged me because I was a kid and she was really, really annoying. But, you know, once you start studying and looking back, she was the first one I actually believed belonged there. You know, because leading up to it, you know, I loved Miss Elizabeth. She was gorgeous. She was so petite and she was so nice, but she really was just window dressing. And that was the same thing with all of the women in wrestling before then. Your Baby Dolls, your Sunshines, your Preciouses. To me, they were just kind of window dressing. And some were more effective than others as window dressing, but they really didn't serve a purpose to me in the story other than to make the guy look good. Missy Hyatt was one of the first women I remember who was an important part of the story.
And exactly, and you believed where she was going. And like I said, she did, you know, we've talked about great managers, but she did what every good manager should do. She got that crowd to the point where they wanted to see her. And she, the few times she got to the ring, she was perfect. She didn't want to get her hands dirty. When someone would go after her, she'd run. If you look at the matches with her and Sunshine, she dressed like a rich girl who thought what wrestlers should look like. So
yeah.
To me, she had it down. She had the gimmick. She had everything down.
Yeah, she definitely knew. And she, I think because she never had that WWE run, you know, she had a little cup of coffee there, and for whatever reason, it went south quick. I think that's one of the reasons why she's so overlooked. That she never had that Fed, and she doesn't have a Fed connection now. Missy Hyatt came in and worked LAW for a while. She was a part of our big Super Summer Spectacular show a few years back, so we got to meet Missy and talk to her, and just an absolute sweetheart, you know, and just the complete opposite of her character. You know, she was a sweetheart. She was very open to talking to everybody and sat in the room with everybody. You know, she didn't prance around like she had an attitude or an ego, and just a sweetheart all around. And I almost feel bad about ribbing her all night long.
Well, then again, Maverick wouldn't be Maverick if he didn't rip somebody.
Exactly.
Come on now, pal. That's literally comes with the territory.
It's just the way I show I like you. I completely and utterly kick you off.
But like we said, man, she was one of them ones that just if I go back in my memory bank, she's the first woman that stuck out to me in wrestling. She's not the first I remember, but she is the first to stick out.
There you go. And stick out she did.
Yeah,
she was
now,
the force of nature.
I will go on record as saying, in her heyday, she was probably one of the most beautiful women in wrestling.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's not even, yeah, to be debated.
All right, partner. It's time for the game of one-upsmanship. Who you got next?
Well, my next pick really was a jack of all trades. And there was nothing she couldn't do. And there was nothing she couldn't get over. And the amount of people she worked with and the way she was able to incorporate herself with that character, yet still maintained herself. Like, she wasn't a chameleon in that, you know, she would dress and be that person that day. And like some of the divas would, some of the women wrestlers would. But she complimented whoever she was working with. It, in a way that she didn't lose herself. And in the ring, unfortunately, she was in an era where women's wrestling didn't get the respect it deserved, but whenever she was able to get in and wrestle, she was awesome. And she was a former WWF Women's Champion. She's a former AWA Women's Champion. One of the best people managers of all time. I'm talking, of course, about sensational Sherri Martel.
Well, you just paid me back. Because you just I stole one from your list, and you stole the next one on my list.
There you go.
I agree with you 100%. Another one could do it all. She could wrestle. She could talk. And any character and she showed her chops by, you know, you put her out there with Michaels. She played one character. You put her out there with Savage. She played another character. You put her out there with Harlem Heat. She was somebody else.
But she was always sensational Sherri.
And she,
you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
She absolutely complimented every one of those guys and fit in with what they did, no matter who it was. And as diverse as it was, the Million Dollar Man and Harlem Heat couldn't be any more different of a character. But she still managed to fit in there perfectly and still be sensational Sherri, still be Sherri Martel.
Because if you – and that's and you just said it. She was always Sherri Martel. She was Sister Sherri. She was sensational Sherri. She was Queen Sherri. But in all of those – even though, like you said, she complimented, she was always, first and foremost, Sherri Martel. And I think that the AWA did not know what they had in her.
Not at all. Not at all.
But, yeah, and like you said, she was somebody who, I think her wrestling got overlooked. Because of when she was, when she came, you know, she came up, but her manager, she's one of the best.
Yeah. The managing thing is really where she made her mark, and really where, you know, I think most people remember her, and you know, she was. You know, everybody she worked with, and the fact that she would be so physical, like I remember getting in there and jumping on Hulk Hogan's back and just starting to wail on him and, you know, getting in there and taking shots from the Nasty Boys. And, you know, she was just a force of nature, and she was so good at everything she did and so good into just making you want her, like very much like you just said about Missy Hyatt. How many times did you just want someone to shut her up?
I did. And you know what's funny is, boy, great minds must think alike, because you posted the exact match that I wanted to post.
Oh, perfect.
Of her of her versus Badu, because I was just about to post it, and I looked, and I was like, oh, he already beat me. And it's the exact same link, everything. And again, you look at, and it just goes back to my point, the AWA didn't know what they had. They literally had two future Hall of Famers in a match, and
yeah,
they couldn't have cared least.
Right. Yeah, and it's a great, great match. If you need, you know, have a couple minutes to watch it for sure. Just a all around great, great talent Sherri Martel was, and one we lost way too soon. And you
exactly.
know, the
yes,
wrestling,
I agree.
The wrestling world truly suffered the loss there.
I'll tell you something. If I still had a wrestling school today and I had female wrestlers, this match would be a must-watch for them.
Absolutely.
Just because the fundamental – watching this match, you could see the crowd was kind of into it, but, you know, they weren't really into women's wrestler. These two didn't care. They went out there and worked their keister off. They played their trade very well. They played up. I have a hard time finding any fault with that match, and it just goes to show you why both of them, you know, made our list.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Agreed.
No, sorry. It was like, you know, I set up my list, and sometimes I have alternates, and today's. Like, I don't know, what's the odds he's going to hit? And it's funny that we're each picking off each other's list.
Yeah. Well, I think there's so many, you know, there's so many male wrestlers, but there's a much smaller percentage of female wrestlers. And the ones who really, really stood out, just stood out. You know, they were amazing all around. And I think we might actually be a victim of both thinking the same thing. You know, clearly we both have not addressed by far, although we've talked about it the entire hour,
mm-hmm.
you know, the greatest of all time.
Yeah, and we're probably going to both have the same greatest of all time. But you know what? You know what's always good, though? Like you said, sometimes we have alternates. We have honorable mm-hmm. mentions. So how about I give you one of my honorable mentions before we go into our – who I definitely know we're both going to say the same person. But you know who one of my honorable mentions was?
Who's that?
Victoria.
Oh, excellent choice. I was a big Victoria fan.
I was too, and she, again, you might find this funny. She reminded me of a young Sherry Martel. Whereas she managed a couple different guys, and no matter
right.
who she managed, she made the character work. Like, I thought her stuff with Stevie Richards was brilliant. Them two for being, you know, the middle of the card.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were phenomenal. I thought they worked well together when she managed other people. She
yeah.
literally went to TNA and carried that whole women's division for the whole time she was there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
She did. Absolutely. And it didn't matter what ridiculousness they asked her to do. She did it with a grace and a professionalism that TNA didn't deserve.
No, they didn't. And to me, she was one, you know, like I said, so with some of these lists, you got to edge out people.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, we can always do our honorable mentions. We can always say, hey, this is somebody we thought. And I'll tell you why she always stood out to me. She was in at a time when there were a lot of bad wrestlers, diva wrestlers.
Yeah.
And no matter who was in there with her, she would step up and make them look like they were the Bret Hart. She would make it look like she was wrestling Bret Hart in there. And I posted one such match with her and Maria, whatever her name was. I know
yeah,
in WWF they just called her Maria.
Yeah.
She's in TNA now.
Right.
Awful wrestler. One of the worst women. She was a horrible manager, but yet you watch this match and it tells you all you needed to know about Victoria. So that's one of my honorable mentions. You got one?
Honestly, I really didn't. I didn't pick up too many honorable mentions. I was very confident in my list. I didn't flip-flop a whole lot this time. So I think I just kind of went with what I went with, figuring we would get around to the big one, you know, and didn't include her on my main list because, you know, in certain categories there are lists, and then, you know, there's one so clearly ahead of everyone else that, you know, in this case she deserves her own list. And
that's right. And we are talking about the great Leilani Kai.
Sure we are. No, clearly we're talking about the fabulous one herself. Fabulous Moolah.
The grand dam of wrestling. Now, I don't know about you, when you had your first exposure to Moolah, my first exposure to her was in the 70s. She was always brought in as an attraction, and she always came out very cocky. And what I liked, sometimes, I don't know if you knew this, sometimes Captain Lou would manage her.
Yes.
And you literally, like, the thing I remember about Moolah was my mother and grandmother just snapping, wanting someone to get in there and kick the living snot out of her. She came out and literally she set the stage for being a diva. She came out like she was better than everybody, that she could do it all, but she was tough as nails.
Oh, she was a full tilt diva. You know, her whole entrance and persona was just fantastic. And to the point where I'll never forget the first time I saw Fabulous Moolah, the women's champion, because I was flabbergasted that anyone had the audacity to put their own picture in the center of
the
belt. You know, and that was such a heel move. And I don't know what facilitated or where it came from or whether she set the precedent, but the fact that her own portrait, her own picture was in the center plate of the belt, to me was just like, what kind of ego does she have? And it was perfect for the Fabulous Moolah. It was all her to a T.
And again, when you saw that, you're like, what is this? You know, this woman has her picture on the belt. I used to think the same thing. And you always wondered, like, does that mean she's never going to lose it?
Right. Little did we know she wasn't going to lose it, because she was literally in charge of booking all of the women for the Northeast Territory for 30 years.
But I'll be honest, I was one of them people that watched Moolah. I compare her to Jerry Lawler. She was on top because she basically was one of the few that could actually carry the women. You know, I'm not saying that the other women were bad. They were good, but they just didn't have that oomph, you know, that...
They weren't Moolah. They just flat out weren't Moolah.
Yeah, basically that's it. They just weren't. And you just... You couldn't... You know, man, I lost words because I'm trying to describe. You just seen it. She was more... She was head and shoulders above the rest.
Clearly. And, you know, she was the standard bearer for years and years and years. And, you know, for whatever, you know, she was in charge of all the women. She booked them all, we know. But she also was so good. You know, she wouldn't have been able to do what she did if she was just a run-of-the-mill talent. And, you know, she was so tough. And to become the ambassador to all of wrestling, not just women's wrestling, to all of wrestling, the way she did, you know, once her career wound down, you know, she was in the early WrestleMania days. I think 3 was one of her last appearances. And that was as the queen of wrestling with she presented Harley Race with the crown. I think may have been her last.
Forgot all about that. You're right.
Big time with the match with Junkyard Dog. Before she returned, I'm sure she made several appearances in the Attitude Era with Harry Mae Young, but, you know.
Well, if you remember, she actually won the belt in the Attitude Era.
Yes, she did. She had that
The reason I remember that so much is because I literally, even though I was in wrestling at the time, could not have wanted something more. When she won that belt, it was almost like, because you always want that your childhood hero to get that last hurrah.
Sure.
Because every few years they tease it with Jerry Lawler.
Because he's they're finally going to give him something.
Yeah.
They're finally going to give Lawler some kind of credit in the Fed.
And when they used to tease it, I was like, oh, man. And then when she won it, I was just like, I don't care if she loses it the next night. She held it. And no one deserved that last rub more than the Fabulous Moolah.
No, absolutely. And a well-respected Hall of Famer. And, you know, just all that she did in wrestling and to multiple, many, many, many generations of women wrestling owe, and the current generation of women wrestling still owe a gratitude to her.
And you know what's funny is you hear some stories about her that she was in the ring. She was tough as nails. She ran a tight ship when it came to the women's wrestlers. Outside, she had a heart as big as the outdoors. You know, one of the most famous stories is, you know, there was a female midget wrestler by the name of Diamond Lil, who basically wrestling dried up because there was, you know, midget wrestling in general, you know, there were few and far between, and you know, little person women wrestling was even worse. So basically, you know, Diamond Lil found herself without a trade. And Mola took her in for 40 years. Supported her, didn't think twice about it. And if you ever read her book, the reason she did it, she says, well, I owed her that because I got her into wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
How many people would have done that? You know, and that spoke. And then when, you know, Mae Young was down on her luck, come live at my house. A good documentary for our fans, if anyone's never seen it, Lipstick and Dynamite. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I have.
I think it's one of the great documentaries on women's wrestling. You know, it's no secret I'm not a fan of a lot of the stuff that goes on today. But when it comes to some of that older stuff, that those gals went out there and they gave 110%. And I actually just posted a match, and you may find
I love that you just referred to them as gals. Like you're 72 years old. Those gals.
Oh, sweet little. But I just posted a match, and it's funny because it's Sherri Martel versus the Fabulous Moolah from 1982.
I was actually going to post that, and I decided not to.
Okay.
I went with the tag match with Wendy Richter, but I saw that video. How crazy is that?
Because if they didn't tell you that was Sherri Martel, would you have known that Sherri Martel?
Not at all. I thought it was a mistake. When I started watching it, I'm like, oh my gosh, it is Sherri Martel.
And you know what made me really sad about watching that? The fact is that, you know, of course, you know, Moolah and Sherri are no longer with us. But there was an old friend of mine in that match, too, who I considered one of the greatest referees in wrestling, but when it came to women's matches, there was a reason he was in there, and that was Dick Worley. If you watch some of the women's matches, he had some of the best spots and sells ever. And especially in the early days when, like I said, they were, you know, they were an attraction, and he always did such a great job. So that's kind of why I wanted to put that too, because they're, you know, I had the pleasure of meeting. And it's just, and the other thing is, and before you say it, I had nothing to do with it, but I had the pleasure of meeting all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's not a coincidence that they're all no longer with us.
Right. Yeah. They're like, oh, we have to leave the planet because we don't want to be on the same planet as you, sir.
That's not cool. But I'm going to give our listeners a little cue in that video. If you go to the 2:26, the 2:26 mark, you are going to see wrestling comedy gold at its best. It is a spot between, like I said, Sherri, Dick, and Moolah. Absolutely hysterical. It's just something you don't see coming in a match, and then when it happened, the crowd just lights up with glee. It's great stuff. But can't argue, man. She had to be number one, and, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't even – like, I didn't even put her on the list because she was so far ahead of the list. You know, there was no doubt to me that she was the number one of all time. You know, whether, you know, she was your favorite or not is another thing, but there's just no denying it.
Well, you know, we talked about Missy Hyatt being, you know, the female on the outside that we remember the most. Anybody who's anybody in wrestling, Moolah was your first memory, you know, of women's wrestling, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure.
If you grew up in from the 70s on and were a wrestling fan, Moolah was your first memory of wrestling.
Absolutely.
And the fact that she was such a kid, and you didn't even realize how old she was, you know, back then. And the fact that she was just so cantankerous and so had an attitude, and she'd pull out the wins out of the blue, and just good memories. I'm glad we both agreed. I actually posted a picture of her belt too. If anyone has never had the pleasure of seeing, I'd love to know where that belt is today.
Yeah.
You know what? If you actually enlarge the picture, I just noticed something that I never noticed before.
Bobby Heenan's next
year. She was more of an innovator than we thought. She had her name on the bottom of the belt.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah.
That's another thing that absolutely I loved about Moolah was whenever she got to interact with Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Were they not two of the best?
They were so hilarious together and so funny together. And, you know, just the weird, can I use the word, sexual tension between the two? It was such a bizarre thing because, you know, Bobby was so good at everything. And he just acted the way he would trip over himself and act like a tongue-tied teenager around Moolah. It was always so great.
Yeah. And while we're on the subject, man, let's send out some good get well wishes to Bobby Heenan, who was hospitalized again this week. And hopefully, you know, he gets out soon because that guy's overcame a lot, man. He deserves a break, you know. Hello?
Yep, I'm here. Very sad to hear. No, it's just reflecting. You know, Bobby brought such a tough couple of years he's had lately. And, you know, the irony that a guy whose voice entertained so many people would, you know, just be gone.
And he's had
so many health problems. And he just, I mean, it's happy he's still here, yes, but. You know, just a shame that he's had to deal with all the health issues he's gone through. And, you know, definitely we wish Bobby a speedy recovery because, you know, his accomplishments and his gift to all of us, you know, can never be repaid.
Exactly. And, you know, but even when you hear about him or you see him, he still always tries to put on a face and has a joke for you. Which is just shows you the quality of person he is. Now, you know who else used to have great reactions with Moolah? Mean Gene Okerlund.
Yes. Oh, yes. Possibly better than Bobby, but yes.
And you got to correct me on this because I'm trying to find. Was there one where he was in a – he was in a dressing room or a bathroom with her and Mae Young.
That was not that long ago, wasn't it? Where they came out of the. Yeah, there was, and we'd have to go back and find it. It was. I'm pretty sure it was an Attitude Era, maybe the year of the Retro Battle Royal, the Gimmick Battle Royal, as they called it. And there was an incident, and it was They did something with the three of them. I'm almost certain of it now that you've said it. Just whatever you do, don't Google Gene Okerlund and Fabulous Moolah in the shower. God knows what you're going to end up with.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's that could be scary. Yeah, I just remember that because it was one of them. WrestleMania was always famous for just out of the blue having people appear and just And I think it was one of them type deals where he comes out and he's fixing his trousers and his jacket, and then all of a sudden you see Mae Young and Mulder coming out. And I'm just like, oh, that's great. only them two. But that was fun. This was fun remembering some of the gals. And again, sometimes women don't get the credit they deserve. Sometimes they get too much credit. But at the same point, you look back and everyone on both our lists, I think the divas, knockouts, whatever they want to call themselves today, could really learn, a lot just on the presentation of themselves, the presentation of the what they do. There was more to it than wrestling, and I think everyone on our list, a lot of people can go out there and, wow you with the spots, but there was just something special about these women that made you remember them. It's been years since Fabulous Moolah passed away, and we still have fond memories of her. Same thing with Mae Young, Sherry Martel, Missy Hyatt. And, it's sad, but I don't think we're going to see divas or women wrestlers and managers and divas or whatever like that anymore.
Well, the world has changed, and, the business has changed, and, some of these girls, I am a big fan of several of the new women who've come up out of NXT. I think Charlotte's phenomenal. I would, tweak a few things, but those tweaks really just, satisfy the old wrestling guy in me. I want to see her in the robe all the time. I want to see her really playing up the Daughter of the Nature Boy thing a little more, and mostly in an aesthetic way, because her in-ring stuff is just great. But, I don't want, when she's wearing a leather jacket and jeans, I'm like, no, you're not. You're the Daughter of the Nature Boy. You have to be dressed to impress all the time.
And a gown. Yeah, in a gown, pearls, diamonds, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny you mention that, because WWE just brought in Tessa Blanchard, Tully Blanchard's daughter.
It's funny. I didn't see the NXT debut last night, but I saw pictures of her pop up on the internet, and I immediately went to, how great would it be if she showed up, because they banned Flair from the match at the next pay-per-view, and I'm like, how great would it be if Tessa Blanchard interfered? just because the old school guy in me wants to see, the Four Horsemen continue in some way.
Well, and that's the thing, you just touched on it with Charlotte. She is Blanchard in name only. There's nothing like... I'd like to see her come to the ring in a robe with a little more cocky attitude. Maybe even use the slingshot suplex.
Right.
But it's kind of just like, hey, this is Tessa Blanchard. Okay. Now, speaking of second generation, there's one that I didn't even know was a wrestler who's going to be debuting on NXT in the next couple weeks, which I'm really interested to see.
Oh,
Ellering's daughter.
I saw a blurb that she was training or going to be involved. I had no idea, that she was even around, honestly. That ought to be interesting. But there's a, second generations aside, I like Sasha Banks. I think she's got a great persona. Having a Snoop Dogg as a cousin, it may help that swagger be legit. Who else have I seen that I really, really... I've always been a Natalia fan, but she just doesn't have a lot of... She's unfortunately adopted Brett's charisma. she just can't really pull off the cool, cocky thing. And the minute she opens her mouth, it's like, oh, boy, she pooped the bed. Bret Hart to me was always best when he was the strong, silent, cocky type. And the minute he started talking regularly, he became the whiniest guy in the locker room. And it always killed it for me with Bret Hart.
I think I may have just came up with something, but I would dare to say Natty Hart is the first female wrestler that needs a manager.
She might need a manager.
She may just.
Maybe Jimmy Hart's available. How great would it be if they brought Jimmy Hart back to manager?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, she really does, because she's got the talent in the ring, but like you said, she just drops the ball when it comes to it's almost like she gets uncomfortable within her own skin.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what idiot decided to try to repackage her in a way that made her even more uncomfortable. It shows you how bad the writing is when they're like, okay, we have this second generation girl. She's really awkward, and she's, you know, she has trouble in the microphone. So let's dress her up in leather and try to make her into it. And this, most of this storyline played out on Total Divas, where they were trying to make her a dominatrix, and that's why the crazy outfit started around the ring, and she was going to be Boss and Dyson get around. It's just like, you guys really are the dumbest bunch of idiots I've ever heard of in a writing room.
Yeah, you literally have a woman who has, you know, the storylines built into her blood.
Right.
And you can't figure it out.
Uh-huh. They're not at all. And it's a shame, because they made such a strong first appearance with the new foundation. Was that what they called themselves?
Yes.
The Hart Dynasty.
Yes. Yes.
I love the idea of the Hart Dynasty, but it just never quite became everything it should have.
For some reason, sometimes WWE just doesn't put thought or give the proper, or they just give up on stuff. Like, you know, today was released a lot of people today.
I saw that, and some of those still have a lot of marketability. Some of the dumbest thing I ever saw was some of
the releasing of Sandow.
Right.
I'm sitting there like, really? You gave that guy every crappy thing, and he made ice cream out of mud.
Yeah. And they never were able to take – he would take the ball. Literally, it's the football analogy. They would screw up the kick. He would take it, run it 85 yards down to the 5-yard line, and they never – freaking be able to get it in the end zone with them.
No, and when he came back for the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, the ovation alone should have had them guys just going nuts, you know,
uh-huh.
with, hey, we got to do this with this guy, or we got to do this with this guy. But again, they went back to, you know, yeah, he's over, but we don't know what to do with him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just baffling to me when you look down the list of the guys they released, you know, Sandow being one of the biggest, but Wade Barrett had such a high upside, and they just wasted him and made him miserable to the point where he wanted to leave. Hornswoggle had his moments without another. You know, once they took the leprechaun away from him, he kind of became pointless and floated around doing weird jobs. So I kind of understand that. If you're not going to put him in another, because you don't want to put him with Sheamus, and there's really little to do with him. I mean, the fact that he survived so long without Finley is a credit to his entertainment. But, you know, El Torito never really got a chance. I liked the little bull gimmick, but again, they repackaged the other guy. So why would they bother to write for him? Cameron was useless from the start. Zeb Coulter's brilliant. Him and Swagger should never have broken up. They should have just totally – they could still, especially in the current climate, political climate, he could be huge.
Again,
and Alex
and
Riley
this,
was never given a chance.
No, and the worst part was is it looked like they were repackaging him and giving him a shot in NXT.
Right.
Because I don't know if you've seen his recent stuff. He came back with a different look. He wasn't as clean cut. But his body was, he was in phenomenal shape. He went out there and put, and they were just giving him a push, but not giving him a push. It was the weirdest thing. They were playing up, hey, Alex Riley makes his return, and they jobbed him. Hey, Alex Riley is back this week, and they jobbed him. It was like, so I got to agree with you. Sometimes I just don't know where they're going with any of their writing.
Right.
And, you know, well, Cameron should have been released before she got hired.
Yeah, pretty much. She never really amounted to much. She, you know, as a funk attack, though, she was okay, but really just not.
Well, no. Well, if you remember, she was the pain in the butt on Tough Enough.
Yeah, yeah.
She was just she was just in it for the money, and to get noticed, and but she didn't want to put in the work. She didn't want to curb her attitude. So you know what? Now, see, people like her should be fired way before this. And I don't know. I'd like to say, see, if this was the days of WCW, when WWF had competition,
right?
I wonder if these people would have got, some of these guys would have got released.
No, they would have worked harder. And honestly, some of them could have benefited from it. Just go spend 2 years over there and come back.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's you know, and unfortunately, we said this 1,000 times, and no matter how many times we say it, it's going to hurt. That is where wrestling suffers today. Without that competition,
second,
you know,
promotion,
you know, where people could bounce back and forth and get, you know, get a second win, you know, which is what everyone was hoping TNA would be. But the only win TNA is dealing out is not good. But well, we digressed.
Yeah,
know, we talked
on a tangent, and it was a almost appropriate tangent because it was wrestling related.
Yeah, hopefully Mike Ferrer doesn't get mad because we talked new wrestling.
Yeah, everybody gets mad at us on this network. Who cares?
How was your May the 4th?
May the 4th was very excellent. I had a great day. I did a lot of fun Star Wars-related stuff. It's a shame I couldn't tell everybody on the network about it. Someone else beat me
we
to
should
it.
Have did a, we should have did a special.
That's all right, what? Because I am very, very close to the announcement of my second radio show, and it's going to be awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Always glad when my friends do well. But on that note, we have almost filled up our 2-hour time slot. You know, now that I know how to program that, I can actually just give us an all-night show.
They wouldn't notice. Like, there was a 9-hour show on the – where did that come from? Oh, man, Frank read the phone book.
I have the old wrestling encyclopedia,
okay.
And it has the bios for over 600 wrestlers.
Just you get on one night and read it.
But in character voices. I don't know how many you could do. I could do a couple.
I can do quite a few.
I can actually do a couple Simpsons voices. I could do Otto. Apu. Not a good Barney, but I can,
you know, maybe that's what we'll do, man. We'll read them in different character voices.
What do you think?
I think that's a plan. 9-hour long show just reading the wrestling encyclopedia.
I love that book because it was written back in the day when, you know, kayfabe was still king. On that note, partner, another good show in the books. Keep checking us out on the Totally you can check us out on the Totally Driven Entertainment Network, at least for this week until we get fired.
We're going to get featured in Denver like everyone else.
How great would that be if, like, right after the show, they just put a future endeavor on us?
That's okay.
Then we'd have to start, like, a TNA network.
Why would we do that? We would do something good.
They ever will. All right, partner. Well, you remember, you can check us out at the LAW Retro Wrestling Radio Facebook page. And, of course, we are also on social media, such as Twitter, in the Twitterverse. We tweet once in a while. And,
do we?
All that other. I do once in a while. I still don't get the whole fascination and the whole twit thing.
Yeah, I don't. I don't tweet or twat or twiddle.
No. But
I'm on
Facebook. A huge announcement. Starting next week, I'm going to become an Instagram model.
There you go. Got that.
So if you check out the LA. No, I'm dead serious. I'm going to pose with the LAW belt in several different poses with different hats, and I'm going to see if it catches on starting on Monday. Check out the LAW Instagram account as why don't you become an Instagram model with me? We could be like the first world tag team Instagram model champions.
I don't know. I'm just not that good looking. I don't know that I'd be a good Instagram model.
Have you seen some of these people that are so-called Instagram models? Brother.
No, I can't say that I have.
We're Burt Reynolds and Tom Selleck. Not now, in the heyday.
A little closer to now.
All right. Well, on that note, partner, you want to give the snappy goodbye?
Snappy goodbye. Happy trails, everybody.
All right. Have a good one.